Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the publication of the Annual Report 2020 conference call and live presentation. I am Judith, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Michael Müller, CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Warm welcome from my side. With me, Beat Fellmann, our CFO, and it's my pleasure to talk you through the annual results 2020. As every year, we uploaded the investor presentation on our webpage, and Beat and I, we will talk you through now through the main points before we turn to the Q&A. We start on page 4 of the presentation. Obviously, the Valora business has been severely impacted by the COVID-19 crisis, but at the same time, we are very pleased that we have proven during that time the resilience of our business throughout the crisis. Despite the collapse of the footfall at our main POS location, we managed to secure our network and business operation with substantial incremental effort along all lines. We had a very strong start to the year 2020, January and February. We were very pleased with the results. We realized during these 2 months, in our view, it has been a confirmation of our strategy and the momentum we built up. And with that, obviously, the government restrictions that have been implemented across all the geographies that we operate our business in March has hit us even harder. But we are proud that throughout the year, we had an uninterrupted service to our customers, and we managed to guide our employees and franchise and agency partner through the crisis with substantial support, both on the health and safety measures necessary, but also with the financial support to secure the stability not only of Valora as a group, but also of our partners operating the stores. We have seen a mixed picture with a severe hit in the first lockdown, then a substantial improvement of the business during the summer, and then again, obviously in the fourth quarter, the second wave, again with a significant impact. And to illustrate that, we turn to page number 5. Our retail business, a breakdown of the opening hours and sales. You see on the top part of the page that throughout the year, in average, we managed to roughly 80% of our POs to operate the 80% of the POs with normal operations. Low point in April, 36% of the POs across the division had reduced opening hours, 11% were closed, and with that number, we realized throughout the 2 waves, external sales with a low point in April of minus 22, a recovery to minus 8 in September, and minus 13 towards of the end of the year. If we turn to page number 6, you see the same illustration for the food service business, and what's striking and also important to bear in mind, if Beat will talk you through the financials in a minute, is that the food service division, so the division that focused exclusively on the on-the-go consumption of food products, have been hit far more severely than the retail business, which benefited from a fairly stable and strong development in relative terms in its traditional classic categories like press, books, tobacco, and game of lock. In the food service division, only roughly 32% of our POS had throughout the year normal operation. At the low point in April, there were more than 50% of our stores operated with reduced opening hours, and almost 50% were actually closed. Again, also here we saw quite a significant improvement of the situation during the summer, with September, where 32% of the POS were actually under normal operation, and then again a deterioration of the situation towards the end of the year, with again in December 35% of the stores closed. This translates in also a far more severe and significant deterioration of the external sales. Low point in April was almost 80% reduction of the external sales, a recovery that brought us to roughly minus 26 in September, and again then second wave hit us hard with more than 50% external sales reduction and decline in December. If we turn to page number 7, an important part of what we achieved in the last year was that we maintained business continuity and that we secured our network. So I'm proud that we can report that our network has been fairly stable, that fluctuation in franchise and agency partner has been only slightly above the pre-crisis years. This was the result of financial support, both from governments, specifically through the support of, for short-time working, but also support that has been provided by Valora, be it in the top-ups of the governmental short-time working compensations, where in March and April we topped it up to 100%, May, June to 90%, and thereafter to 80% in all the countries we operate. And additionally, the financial support that we as a group, incremental to what governments have been provided, what we as a group provided to our franchise and agency partner to bridge liquidity shortages in their specific businesses. If we turn to page number 8, an important element of the cost measures that we implemented in last year was obviously the rent concessions. However, we have seen a very mixed bag in terms of what we achieved with the different landlords. Overall, it's 11% of the 11% of rent reduction of the actual contractual rent for 2020 that we realized. We are pleased with that amount on one hand, but on the other hand, it's obviously a disproportional contribution to the actual footfall performance we have seen in the different locations. The 11% reflects also the high level of minimum rents that we have in a selected number of our contracts. We see significant differences between countries and formats, but overall minimum rents have been increased over the last couple of years, and therefore the sales declined in an historically unprecedented sales decline that we experienced in last year has not been fully mitigated by the turnover linked elements in these rents. And with that, we turn to page number 10 and the financial results for 2020. Overall, I mentioned we had a strong start until the end of February. we realized now for the year a positive EBIT of 14.1 million Swiss francs, which is at the upper end of the guidance, despite the significant sales deterioration throughout the year. We are especially pleased with the development of the free cash flow. We generated 38.1 million free cash flow, an EBITDA of 83.4 million, which was also, on one hand, the result of a very focused investment decisions, but also a consistent, sustainable management of our network and capital. I want to highlight the retail business, the retail division, in the context of this unprecedented crisis. Retail realized in the division a 1.9% EBIT margin, which is, in my view, quite remarkable given the sales decline also in that division of 12.5% and confirms the resilience of that business. The food service division has been hit significantly harder by the reduction of the footfall, the changes in the consumer behavior, specifically in the on-the-go consumption of the food. But despite that, realized the EBITDA margin of 7.6%. And we are pleased that we managed to mitigate 55.5% of the gross profit decline with significant cross measures across the group. One of the highlights in our view of the year is that we maintained our financial stability and flexibility, both with a strong cash generation, but also with the efforts we made on the financing side, starting with April. In April, the renegotiation and the increase of a syndicated loan that provides us substantial flexibility, which is but is unused currently, and the share capital increase in November 2020. On the basis of that strong balance sheet that you'll see in a minute, in our view, we are extremely well prepared for the turnaround we expect for 2021 and for the time beyond the crisis. Ultimately, also important to mention, we had a year where the collaboration across all units on the management level was not only very strong, but was also strengthened through the crisis. I'm personally very pleased with how the management performed throughout the crisis, and I'm specifically happy to have Beat with me, Beat Fellmann, who joined as a new CFO in July last year. I turn to page 11 in terms of the key figures, some of them already mentioned. External sales across the group declined 16.7 million. GP margin with only a slight decline of 1.4 percentage points, which also supports, in my view, the resilience of the business and ultimately also the strategic relevance of our business. EBITDA declined to 83.4 million and EBIT, as mentioned, to 14.1. Free cash flow 38.1, and the leverage ratio as a result of these key metrics is currently at, in our view, very healthy 2.5 times, only an increase of 0.5 times versus a very strong full year 2019. If we turn to the right-hand side of this chart, you see the significant differences in the financial performance between the divisions that I referred to earlier. The retail business realized on a basis of a 12.5% external sales decline, an EBITDA of 66.3 million, a decline of only 25 million and an EBIT of almost 28 million, which is reflects a decline of 26.5 million. Whereas the food service division experienced the decline of 33.2 million on external sales, so far more severely impacted by the crisis, and as a result of that, experienced also a decline on the EBITDA side of 50.4 million and EBIT of 51.6 million compared to a strong full year 2019, which left that division with a negative EBIT at 8.5 million. We turn to page number 12. The breakdown of the external sales and net revenue, the decline of 16.10% breaks down in the two food venues and the what we call classical categories of press, book, and tobacco category. You see that the food venues category, so specifically the food on the go, has been impacted more severely than the tobacco category, with a drop of 4.6 percentage points. With a drop of 27.9 percentage points in local currency versus full year 2019, which is far more severely than the press, book, and tobacco category, which declined at 8.1%. On page number 13, we break down the sales development by POS clusters. Historically, the main focus of our expansion strategy was on the transportation hub, or has been on transportation hub. We are in a situation where roughly 50% of our business is exposed to the transportation hubs. And as you can see here on the left-hand side in the red box, this is also that part of the cluster that has been most severely hit, obviously, by the restrictions and the COVID-19 crisis. We all experienced a significant drop in mobility, and this results on the retail side in a drop of external sales in that cluster of 20% throughout the year, fairly consistent allocated to first and the second half year, which illustrates the impact of the two waves we experienced last year. And food service, very similar picture, even a slightly more severe decline in the second half and far more severe than the retail division, based on the exposure, exclusive exposure to the food products of 40% throughout the year. If you compare that on the retail division, for example, with the shopping malls or also agglomerations and gas stations, you see that part of the business has experienced a far better performance than the transportation hubs and contributed then especially in that division positively to ultimately the financial results that we realized. And with that, I hand over to Beat, who will talk you through line by line through our P&L and balance sheet.
Thank you, Michael. A warm welcome from my side as well. I start with a deeper dive into the divisions and the subdivisions, then run through balance sheet, cash flow statement, and then we'll finish with the guidance for 21 then. So first on page 14, net revenue. As you have heard from Michael, we achieved 1.697, that's the figure, billion net revenue, which is a decrease of 16.4%. Here, diving into retail and food service, it's very obvious and Michael mentioned it before, retail reduced only by 13.7%, food service 30.4%. And going one step further down, you can see on this page that retail Switzerland, with a reduction, a single-digit reduction of only 8.1%, underlines the resilience of this business, the positioning, the strategic positioning of this division, particularly in Switzerland. Food service, diving into the subunits in food service, then you can see it in the text on the right-hand side. You see that the B2C activity in food service, be it in Switzerland or be it in Germany, reduced by 36 or even 38%, which is, of course, much more severe than what we have seen in retail. The B2B business helped a bit in this division. In the B2B business, the reduction is only 17.4%, particularly supported by the activities in the US, where we saw here, even compared with last year, it is an increase of 26%. Then on page 15, something which is, I would say, one of the most important ratio or comparison for Valora, for management of Valora, to steer through this tremendous crisis. And that's basically the ratio, how much of the lower gross profit we can compensate with reduced operating costs. And that's exactly what is shown here. The reduced gross profit of 173.9 million or 19% could be compensated by a operating cost reduction of almost 100 million, 96.5, which is equal to 11.7%. Where are the most important drivers of this cost reduction? You see it down here, 52 million from reduced personal costs, and one could now easily say, yeah, that's just a state-driven compensation based on the short-time compensation across the countries we are operating in. But it's only 16 million out of the 52. 35 million were achieved by reduced personnel expenses. 24 million then contribute lower rent amount, and last by no means least, 20 million were generated by reduced logistical costs and administration costs. A word on page 16 to gross profit. Here again, this minus 19%, and checking out here the GP margin, you see an interesting development. Retail was basically able to slightly increase the GP margin by 0.4 percentage points. In Switzerland, the promotional income is of utmost importance here. Of course, as well, in crisis, human beings tend to play lottery, this kind of things, which was extremely important for us, particularly in the second half of the year. And in Germany, the reduced VAT rate was a kind of a tailwind as well for our business. On page 17, the operating cost, maybe just one word here to retail. After these very positive figures, one would have most probably expected in retail Switzerland a higher reduction number on net operating costs, but here you can see it becomes very visible that the retail division in Switzerland had to digest higher SBB rental costs overall. So they not able to compensate them fully. That's why you see a clearly reduced number of cost decreases. Overall, nevertheless, retail was able to compensate 67.3% of the reduced GP decline or GP amount, and food service on the other side, due to a higher fixed cost portion, only 45.1%. But overall, as Michael already mentioned, 56% reduction of the lower GP, that's really an achievement. Then on page 18, a simple math, 743 million GP, 729 million net operating costs brings us, same as that, down to 14.1 million EBIT, which is at the upper end of our guidance we gave during the trading update in November. I think an important information here is at the very bottom, the fact that all formats, all activities were able, even during this tremendous crisis, to realize a positive EBITDA in 2020. On page 19, then, you can see where the EBIT of 14.1 million was generated. It's obvious it's in retail, the 27.6 million. Switzerland and Germany both good contributors. Germany even with an EBIT margin of 2.8%. Again, this was, Michael mentioned it before, this was generated based on a 13.7 lower net revenue base. And food service then had a 30.4% lower net revenue base, and with such a low basis, I think it's obvious that it was almost impossible for them to get to a positive EBIT figure. Finally, they ended up with a minus 8.5 on EBIT level. Then going further down, to the bottom of the P&L, net profit on page 20. The group as a whole generated a loss of 6.2 million. This is, of course, based on financial expenses, which are slightly lower than the year before, and a tax credit, tax loss, in a loss-making situation, the tax contribution is normally positive. That is the case here with us as well. So a small contribution on the tax side brings us down to the net loss of 6.2 million. CapEx, virtual CapEx on page 21. Yes, we were very disciplined on CapEx spending. Reduced it by 40% from 94 to 55, and here for us it's very important that we, the money we spent for maintaining the substance was more or less the same. It was reduced only by 4 million. The big reduction was on expansion and innovation. I think that's important that we did not jeopardize in any way the substance we have running within our group. Free cash flow then on page 22, highlights for particularly for the CFO, of course, 38.1 million free cash flow. That's an achievement in the current climate. This was achieved based on a more consistent, stricter network and capital management. You see, biggest contribution is from line network and capital management. I think that shows the discipline of the Valora, the group as an organization, in a very nice way. The cash generation ratio overall remained more or less the same as in 2019, with 45%, I think, a very good rate. Then on page 23, cash, important, the cash increased by 107 million. That is based on the free cash flow first, second, then on the capital increase, of course, where we could welcome proceeds of 69 million. Overall, I think we have a very sound, very solid financing situation. We have a Schuldschein Darlehen, which is going to mature end of April, of 72 million euros. Cash is ready to be repaid, so that is basically, that box is ticked off. For me, it's important. Be important to mention that many parties have contributed to the success of Valora in this crisis year, and that includes shareholders. They have not enjoyed any dividend payment in 2020. They have contributed fresh capital end of 2020, and now for the second time they will not enjoy a dividend payment in 21. The balance sheet, few words. Balance sheet, I think, is very solid, very sound. Equity ratio increased by 1.4 percentage points to 47.3, and very important in a crisis year, net debt reduced from 320 to 211 million, which brings us, Michael mentioned it before, to a leverage ratio, the most important key figure for us when it comes to covenants, to a very, very, very solid 2.5. With the Corona headroom we have in place at the moment, we can easily maneuver and fly through difficult times which might occur, still occur the next couple of weeks. The maturity profile of the group, on page 25, the SSD in 2021, as I said, we can take off, and then for the next maturities in 23 and 24, if the financial markets are in trouble, then we would still have our CFA of 150 million, which is currently entirely free for usage. That brings me to the financial outlook on page 27. And I'd like to start here with a few fundamental questions. We, the management, the board, the entire organization is convinced that Valora stands on very solid pillars. The trends we have built our structures, positions, strategy on, they remain valid regardless whether we have had now this crisis or not. And these are particularly the changing lifestyles with a more important out-of-home impulse consumption, the increasing mobility factor. I mean, people are desperately looking for being more mobile again. And then, of course, whatever comes from digitalization remains extremely important for the group. So these three pillars, they remain important. And of course, on page 28, there are some headwind kind of activities in the market, but we assess them as being short-term, maybe medium-term, but they will not fundamentally change our position, our strategy, because all these mobility restrictions, protective measures, and so on, even home office, we believe, have a minor impact on our future activities. So all this brings us on 29 to the guidelines or the outlook for 21. And first of all, we like to say that the start in 21 was a tough one. I mean, when we last time talked to you beginning of November, nobody expected such a severe second wave with hard lockdowns as we have seen, and in many cases, particularly Germany, are still in. So the start was tough, but we will see, and that's the term our government, the Bundesrat, has used, a step-by-step ease of the restrictions. How fast it's going to be happen, we might be might have more information this afternoon, but for the time being, we assume that a important increase of footfall is not going to happen before, let's say, June 21. The improvement or the recap of our business is going to be most probably in a similar kind of speed like between the first wave and the second wave last year. Food category, and we have seen that, is going to perform much better than the other ones, which is a good thing for our not only for our sales figures, but particularly for our profitability. Without any doubt, H1 is going to be heavily impacted, but we are convinced that the second half of 21 is going to be substantially better than the second half of 2020. And even more, we believe that profitability towards the end of 2021 is going to be comparable to the profitability we enjoyed before the crisis. This is based on, of course, continued cost management, tough, tight cost management. I think we have gained some experience on this point during the last 12 months. This is based as well on a continuation of the refurbishment of the SBB locations. It has to be meaningful, of course, and an important thing as well. We want to be sure that our digital investments will not be jeopardized the coming months. So we will continue to invest into this competence in the future of Valora. We are convinced that we are good positioned. We are convinced that we have made our homework, be operational or financially, and based on this, we are convinced that we will see a turnaround in 21. The only $1 million question remains, and that is when. As I said, by the end of 21, we're going to perform much better than how we started, and that would lead us then as well to a a much stronger 2022. With that, back to you, Michael.
Thank you very much, Beat. And for the operational highlights, I turn to page 31. We start here the operational highlights again with an overview of the cost reductions. Obviously, that was the most important not only effort but also achievement last year, that we realized 96.5 million of cost reductions along the three measures, a little over 50% personnel, including the agency and franchise cost reductions, not only from short-time work, but also by significant adjustments of capacity throughout our network, including the support functions, and also netted by temporary partner support that we provided to our franchise and agency partner to ensure the economic viability of their business. Roughly 20% were allocated to other operating expenses, which includes, for example, the logistics, but also reduced administration costs, and roughly 25% are allocated of these cost improvements to the rent concessions, which were mainly granted in the lockdown phase. And with that, I turn to page 32, because very important to us is that we, throughout the crisis, not only achieved a significant cost reduction, but beyond that, and despite these cost measures, we improved our business. We improved the business on the retail side and the retail division, both on the refurbishment of the new locations. The SBB refurbishment performed on all metrics very strongly, better than non-refurbished stores, and we received very positive customer feedback on these refurbishments, which leaves us with an optimistic view on what's ahead of us when we will complete this rollout. We also launched new delivery services with the Avec Now in Switzerland, for example, improved the self-scanning technology in the Keiko's loyalty app. We introduced new products and specifically worked on an important effort throughout the crisis to food waste with introducing what we call second chance, so sales on the following day. Retail Germany and Retail Switzerland also opened new stores at gas station in Germany for the very first time. We launched a new format, a very advanced format for the German market, improved in Germany overall the food competence, and last but not least, introduced also through this crisis or in the crisis, a new ERP system, which usually is an effort for itself under normal circumstances, and I'm very pleased that we managed to complete that project successfully, even in the crisis year 2020. If we turn to page number 33, in terms of the highlights on the food service division, most importantly, the B2B production side, we managed in Q1 to fully complete the announced capacity expansions. In Germany, we added two new lines, and the US, one new line. We used these lines to offer new products, to increase the engagement with food service channels who have been less affected by the restrictions. And we also addressed or started to sell through new routes to the market, for example, with e-commerce partners specifically in the US, and they have mentioned it already. We are very proud that we realized the 26.5 6% sales increase in local currency in the U.S. business on the B2B side, even in that crisis year. On the B2C, so our consumer-facing business within the food service division, we specifically introduced the new Backwerk Next Level, a fresher and healthier concept that developed on the basis of our Dutch Backwerk business. We introduced a new uniform logistic platform for the Ditch and Backwerk business in Germany, which is also quite an achievement given the circumstances last year. And in my view, most importantly, we strengthened the network with an active support of our franchise and agency partner and ensured the robustness with almost no partners in insolvency during that crisis year. That's the basis of future growth and has been also a very strong sign of trust towards our network partner. So I turn to page number 35 in terms of the key strategic priorities for 21. On the retail division, most importantly, the SPB refurbishment that has been slightly delayed during the lockdown, specifically last year, will continue and be completed by the end of 2022. And as I mentioned earlier already, we are very optimistic given the momentum that we developed, not only in the refurbishment, but actually with the results that we realized in these new stores. So our expectation has been confirmed that these stores will be operating quite substantially above the average of the other stores. We will continue the expansion of Alvec at the gas stations in Switzerland and with the K-Kiosk brand in Germany. And we will also improve on the operational side, specifically the supply chain with the launch of a new supply chain 1st of January 2022. And we'll continue to improve not only on the basis, but then also specifically beyond 2021 on the basis of that new supply chain platform, continuously our food offering. If I turn to page 36, the key strategic priorities for food service, first of all, with the new Backwerk Next Level, we will continue the rollout. We will benefit from the first positive results we realized in the stores that we launched. But we will also aim to actively participate in the market consolidation that is specifically starting to take place in the food service business in the geographies we operate. And on the B2B side, quite obviously, we want to leverage the existing capacity expansion that we completed last year and leverage that capacity to address new segments of the market. On page 37, a quick overview of the four pillars of our digital innovation efforts. Most importantly, we managed throughout last year to hire more than 30 engineers that work now not only on the business concept of these pillars, but actually on the technology for these pillars. And we achieved quite some promising improvements along all dimensions, starting with the autonomous stores that we shared with you in the past already. We have pilots here in Zurich, not only at the ETH with the box, but also a new pilot at the Hartplatz with the 24/7 hybrid model. So we use the existing autonomous store technology not only in a dedicated format like the AVEC box, but in an existing store to grant access for our consumers during the night and on Sunday specifically. E-commerce and delivery, I already mentioned AVEC Now. We will continue with that delivery effort was actually quite a successful relaunch, specifically in the second wave. We benefited from the experience of the pilot in April. Loyalty and payments, specifically in Brezelkönig and the food service division overall, we will launch new apps and improve the digital footprint in that division. And overall process improvements, Beat also mentioned it, we benefited already last year quite a bit from improvements, specifically if it came to forecast analytics in our stores. I turn to page 38. Also, sustainability measures gained traction throughout last year. We communicated in the past. It's an important pillar of our strategy overall along the three dimensions, people, planet, and products. Also last year, we made quite substantial progress with quite a large number of initiatives that we also document in our sustainability report. And I would like to refer for the moment to that report. But we are fully committed to continue the journey we started also on the sustainability measure. On page number 39, Bob Finance, a brief update. We shared with you in the past the initiative. Bob Finance is today an established consumer finance specialist in the Swiss market, both in the field of B2C, so direct to consumer, but also on the B2B2C, so indirect to consumer. We improved the loan portfolio quite substantially during the crisis, by more than 10%. And realize the positive EBIT contribution. Also that, in absolute terms, small, but in relative terms and overall, an important highlight of last year, that today, Bob Finance is in a very strong strategic position, or well positioned for future growth with the new technology platform, but also with new partners, specifically in this Buy Now, Pay Later initiative that we started roughly 18 months ago with Apple, and where we acquired new partners, quite well-recognized partners, for example, Breitling, that uses that service in fully integrated in their e-commerce offering. And with that, I turn to page 41, the key takeaways of 2020. We talked you through all the points. I only want to highlight towards the end that I'm pleased that we achieved what we planned on the dimension of financial stability. We defined the focus in March together with our board of directors on that measure. The key measure was cash generation, but ultimately the stability of our balance sheet. I think with a leverage ratio that we realized throughout the full year now, fully impacted by two waves of 2.5 times, we are extremely well positioned for what's ahead of us. We strongly believe that we are strategically well positioned, that the macro trends are unchanged to support the recovery of our business, and that we will see that turnaround in 2021. And specifically in the food service category, they had referred to the impact, the severe impact that we experienced on the food category overall, with a substantial decline of the EBIT in the food service division. We expect quite clearly that also throughout the recovery, and we experienced that already last summer, specifically that category will recover substantially and create a significant operational leverage in our business and will ultimately improve the quality and profitability of our business in the months ahead. But as Beat said, obviously the most or the biggest uncertainty is still in terms of the timing, but we are very confident that towards the end of the year, we will return to levels of profitability that we have seen, which are comparable to what we have seen pre-crisis. And with that, I conclude on page 43 with the next events. We have mentioned it already. The Board of Directors proposes to carry forward the 2020 net profit in full to the new financial year and therefore suspend the dividend for one more year. On the board level, we have Felix Dinsom, who stands for election as a new member, and Susan Thoma, who's not standing for re-election at the AGM, which will take place on March 31st, 2020. And with that, I turn to the Q&A, and thank you very much for your attention.
The first question is from John Vero with ZKB. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Good day, everybody. I have three questions, if I may. First one on the whole reduction of your car kiosks. I think you reported a reduction of 46 car kiosks and 9 press and bookstores. Are those, let's say, not recurring stores, so you will really close them forever, or are they partially closed and you just search for successors in relation to that? Then second question is in relation to your partner support for franchise partners and agencies. Can you please quantify and specify the partner support that you paid to those partners in 2020? And then another question is, in general, the whole SBB refurbishment topic. You mentioned that you want to do it as fast as meaningful. Maybe a bit provocative question, why not now taking the, let's say, the opportunity also of the low traffic at those stores and refurbishing as much as you can, as quick as possible? Thank you.
Thank you very much for this question. I start with the first one on the K kiosk number. It's actually a combination. So there are a couple of stores that we closed forever. This is in some cases related to the crisis where it has been part of a renegotiations with landlords. This typically affects stores that have been weak also pre-crisis and ultimately then result in an improvement of the K-kiosk format profitability overall. And another also quite substantial part of that is related to new positioning, so rebranding of these stores. So you're aware that as part of the SBB refurbishment, some of the K kiosks are now run under the AVEC banner. So ultimately changing not only the banner, but also the positioning of these stores. And this results then overall in the changes of this 46 K-kiosk compared to 2019. In terms of your second question, partner support, we will not be more specific than give you the indication that we provided a low single-digit million number in partner support to both franchise and agency partners. And question number three in terms of the SBB refurbishment. So with meaningful, I understand your comment that maybe now it would be the time to actually refurbish as many as possible. So ultimately, first of all, it's not only in our hands. So we have partners, including landlords, who have to contribute to that. And given the still quasi-lockdown situation that we operate in, this still restricts us now and then in terms of the refurbishment. And secondly, and more importantly, it's also a result of our capacity management in terms of refurbishments require the contribution of not only our construction teams, but many more people, and we navigate still in a fairly under a fairly tight cost management. And this combines to the comment that we proceed as fast as meaningful, but this should also indicate that I fully agree with your comment. It is obviously meaningful to proceed fairly quickly, since we have now the first very strong positive indications that these stores actually operate well above the average of our network, and we will benefit going forward from these refurbishments in terms of profitability and sales performance in our Swiss retail network.
Very helpful, thank you.
The next question is from Alain Oberhuber with Stifel. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Michael, Beat and Annette. Alain Oberhuber, Stifel. I have three questions as well. The first is regarding the gross profit. Congratulations for the strong cost reduction you have done. I'm a little bit more interested in your outlook, in particular for 2021. Do you expect that gross margins should be more or less similar than in 2020? And the second question is, if we see a nice acceleration, in particular in the second half of this year, going into 2022, do you expect that gross margins could go up again to the same level as in 2019? The second question is regarding dividend. When do you expect dividend payment to be back? And what are the KPIs for dividend payment to start again? And the last question is regarding your firepower. You talked about consolidation in food service. Could you give us a little bit more granularity? Where does Valora currently have white spots in products and region? And when do you expect Valora has enough strong balance sheet to do these acquisitions? Thank you.
Thank you very much for these questions. Maybe I start on the consolidating question and then hand over to Beat. In terms of white spots, I think what we see in the food service market is that there are, first of all, the experience in terms of sales decline and decline in profitability has been experienced by, as far as we have the transparency, all or ultimately, yes, all competitors throughout these in the market. And this, on one hand, may lead to some strategic assessment if these activities are not fully in the core of these competitors, or ultimately could now and then also to lead financially distressed situations, which then we see as an opportunity to step in as a group who benefits from its size and experience and footprint in that market. And this could be in the food service market, specifically in the existing geographies, on one hand, highly complementary acquisitions, meaning where we can fully leverage our existing operations and product footprint. And beyond that, but always more cautious, we could also consider entering into slightly deviating or new formats where we can leverage, on one hand, our support functions, but also logistics and experience in ultimately operating these stores at, with the most important landlords in these geographies. we will always focus on the synergy potential of these acquisitions. They have not, or they are not necessarily always very large acquisitions. We also look in the consolidation on a more regional level now and then. But we see now in the food service market, in all the geographies we operate, but most importantly in Germany, a far elevated activity level now in terms that we have far more opportunities at realistic level, let's put it that way, than what we have seen pre-crisis. And given the strong balance sheet and given the strength of our operations, we will benefit now from that situation, or we want to benefit from that situation, and we are very actively going after these situations. I hope this answers your question in terms of the being more specific on the consolidation. And with that, I hand over to Bea.
Yes, your question regarding GP margin and cost reduction. Maybe first of all, it's for me as a new CFO, having seen just the crisis mode of this company, that's a relatively easy one to answer. It can almost only go upwards again in all these kind of key ratios. No, but the answer is pretty simple, and I like to refer to page 16 regarding the gross profit margin. I mean, we have seen a reduced margin of 1.4 percentage points, and the reason for that is very simple. It's the sharper decrease of food sales. If I take all food sales across the Valora group, regardless in which division, we had to digest a reduction of 30% across the entire group. And that's going to for sure pick up again. And with each and every percentage point up here, we will enjoy the benefit of this higher margin business. So we are totally convinced that on the GP side, be it the numbers such or be it on the margin, we will see much better figures already second half of this year and then certainly 2020. On the cost side as such, I think I made it very clear as well, we continue to be tough on the cost management. I think we have taken our lessons. We know how to play has to be played. The game has to be played here. So I think that continues. So regarding the ratios, and one important thing, of course, remains these short-term work schemes, but they have all been prolonged in the relevant countries. So you can easily assume that the cost saving ratio here remains more or less the same. I think that's a fair assumption.
The next question is from John Cox with Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks very much for the presentation. A couple of questions for you. You seem to be saying that you expected by the end of the year some of the you'd go back to 2019 monthly EBIT. I'm saying EBIT towards the end of the year. I just wanted you to clarify that and just to confirm that is the case, because clearly then you would already be in 2022 if that's the case, which I guess it would be if you're already saying it's going to be in 2021. You seem to be talking then about an absolute EBIT, you know, at least in line with the 91.5 we saw in 2019. So that's the first question, because obviously you do have those amortization charges from the SBB tender going through your P&L as well. You seem to be now saying you can offset that. I wonder if you can just confirm that. That's the first question. Second question, just on the cost blocks and what may or may not be, you know, permanent. You know, you mentioned the sort of 50-odd million from staff. You mentioned 16 was furlough. I'm just wondering how much in there as well with what is left, around 35 million, is to do with lower sales and the franchisees. You're paying them less. What I'm trying to work out is, you know, what have you removed from that cost block in terms of just pure staff costs to be able to run that forward? And then, you know, to come to the sort of other operating expenses line, I just wonder if you can talk to us about where you are on the rent renegotiations. In the statement, I think you said, you know, talks were started, and then obviously as things deteriorated through the, you know, through that final quarter, obviously it was other priorities to hand. And then just looking at the EBIT you had on both businesses in H2, obviously retail looked great. I know there were, you know, various things moving around in there, but, like, you know, for me it looks like retail, you had an EBIT of about 26 million in the second half of the year. And I know there was some movement on the whole, you know, the rents you were talking about, and that was maybe included in H1, you know, all of this sort of stuff. And then in food service, it looks like you actually were profitable in the second half of the year. And then when I look at your sales figures for, you know, all of those different months, you were down pretty substantially, you know, in most of that period. But it seems that you turned a profit. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on the profitability of food service in terms of where you see the break-even now, i.e. if your sales are down 10-15% in food service, you now assume that you could be breaking even because you've lowered your cost structure so much in that. So, yeah, sorry, a lot of different questions. And probably just a final one. You may remember at the 2019 Capital Markets Day, you were talking about, you know, 20 basis point margin improvement annually on average to 2025, and I see you're saying in the annual report these figures still stand, but obviously the timing is a little bit off. But you know, are you still saying, you know, like basically, you know, 20 basis points per annum till you know, over sort of 5 or 6 years from 2019? Then, you know, in theory, you're still sort of moving towards that, you know, improvement in margin over the next couple of years by the time we get to 2025, and that's still the basis of targets. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for this set of questions. And I start, and Beat will jump in if I forget something, or he is more than welcome to add. Starting with your question regarding 2022 guidance. So first of all, we do not give any guidance for 22. And most importantly, we said there is still quite a fair amount of uncertainty. Now, following your logic, yes, we confirm towards the end of the year, as we said, we expect comparable levels of profitabilities in on a monthly basis, which then could ultimately lead to the assumption 2022 will be equal 2019. Now, I can confirm that we are very optimistic for 2022 on the basis of the assumption that we will see the turnaround in 21 towards the end of the year. Technically speaking, we do not provide a guidance that says that we will be at EBIT order of magnitude of 19 million, so comparable to 19 in 22. This is less a result. I think you mentioned the increased SBB rents. There will be some effects, but bear in mind already in 20 we had quite substantial effects from that built in the retail division and result. And I agree with you. I'm also very pleased with the financial performance during the crisis of the retail division, and already quite a substantial part of SBB rent increases is already built in that result and only confirms, in my view, the strengths and ultimately also the sustainability of these of that business. Now, in why not being more specific on 2022? I think there's still a fair amount of uncertainties also related, to be fair, to some of the investments ahead of us. So Beat mentioned, for example, the digital efforts. We are fully committed to the digital innovation. Digital innovation, I'm 100% convinced that we will benefit from these initiatives substantially in the mid and long term. Obviously, as you have seen, we hired 30 new people. We continue to invest in that, and this will always also affect group costs in 21 and then potentially 22. This is something that we will also adjust to the overall environment and the overall situation, and that is another reason why we are a little bit cautious in giving you a very specific EBIT number, be it for 21 but also then beyond 22.
Sorry, in terms Michael, of your, if I can just interrupt then. So, but you are confirming that by the end of this year, because of, you know, the costs you've done and the renovations and the shops you've already seen, I guess the uplift in sales and the cost cutting you've done on the personnel line and elsewhere, that the EBIT on a monthly basis should be more or less the same as the EBIT in 2019?
On a comparable level, yes. I confirm that. Towards the end of the year, whether it's November or December, and that's probably the most important addition I would make to your comment. It depends obviously also there on the recovery, but we are absolutely convinced that we will enter into this turnaround recovery phase in H2, which then results to sales levels, which ultimately lead then to comparable levels of profitability towards the end of the year. Yes.
Because when then I look at consensus for 2022, it's around 70 million EBIT. And so it looks like consensus is substantially wrong then, based on what you're saying today.
Well, I appreciate your question, but as you know from previous conversations, I do not comment now here more specifically the consensus, since we have no guidance out there for 2022. Beat mentioned on the guidance or outlook slide that we will come back to you at the H1 results presentation and provide you with more detail and also more specific outlook than also beyond the 6 months, which will be then ahead of us in 21. And so I hope you understand that we are not more specific right now, since there is still quite some uncertainty attached to that, driven by factors I mentioned earlier. So I move to your second question regarding furlough and the question how much we benefited from lower agency fees. which, as you point out correctly, are also built into these personnel cost savings that we realize. Now, and maybe Beat wants to jump in here, but ultimately, just as an overall comment, I mean, the personnel cost reductions are not exclusively related to furlough, short-time work compensation, and the and this agency fee effect, but have been very significantly impacted by the adjustment in the capacity. Mm-hmm. And we documented, I think, at the very beginning of the presentation quite clearly how severely we adjust the capacity, be it in opening hours, mm-hmm. be it in closures of the stores. And in that context, furlough, the short-time work compensation, was just a very helpful, to be fair, government aid to bridge these capacity adjustments, in a sense that we did not have to let go our employees, but rather could move them into short-time work. Ultimately, we benefited with the 60 million that they have mentioned. And the same applies, obviously, also to the agency partners. So also they had adjustments in their cost structure when we adjusted capacity in these stores, which then ultimately also led to agency fee reduction. So in order to break down the number on the store level, I think it would go well beyond what the transparency we typically provide on these in these items. But I think what you can take away, it has a lot to do with capacity adjustments, and yes, there is also an element of sales reduction on agency fees. And then secondly, also very important to mention, a substantial part has also been contributed by the support function. So it did not only apply to the POS network, but it applied also and still applies, they have mentioned, we're still under a very tight cost management right now, also applies to all the support function, which means that we reduced capacity along with the POS capacity also there. And this then contributed in terms of reduced personnel costs very directly.
So basically, when things normalize, then we should assume that personnel line would be back to the 246 we saw in 2019. Is that what you're saying? So there's nothing you've done to actually remove any component. It's really just a factor of lower revenue, furloughs, lower agency fees. So there's been no sort of removal of a cost block there at all on a structural basis. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Roughly, that's a fair assumption. I think with a couple of exceptions. So there have been also on the personnel cost adjustments, which are here to stay. I think we mentioned at one point in the presentation that we went through the crisis with only a limited number of layoffs. Obviously, they will sustain, and now and there have been also adjustments in the structure and the capacity allocation that will also be sustainable. But on a broader scale, in the light of 100 million of cost reduction, your assumption is fairly accurate. Yeah.
Okay.
Then your third question is, as far as I understood, related to food service. Now, first of all, you mentioned that we've seen a profitable H2, if I understood that correctly.
Yeah,
do you want to comment, Bill?
Yeah, it's your math is correct. Basically, it's a small profit in food service in the second half of 2020. And then you were trying to find the break even of the food division, and that's a difficult one. I think that maybe goes beyond the time we have available now, but here it's important that we have in food service first of all the B2B business, that we have the fixed costs we talked about. It's a completely different situation than compared with the B2C business. Maybe as a very rough guidance, but to be further elaborated on that, but maybe one could say between 75% or 80% indices, this division should be profitable again, just as a really rough guide. In the light of time, maybe.
Yeah, maybe as a proxy, I mean, you can compare a little bit how we commented on Q3, which is in terms of sales development in that order of magnitude. Mm. I think this gives you probably some indication. But the only thing I would like to add is, and I think you mentioned that as well, obviously operational leverage is the biggest within the food service division. And the way we use that term, operational leverage, ultimately leads to a situation where we've seen the biggest decline, given sales decline and margin decline, in the decline in EBIT, despite the cost measures that we also implemented in that division, partly also because on an EBIT line, you have quite substantial depreciation coming from fixed assets in the on the production side. And then on the other side, obviously, you see, I mean, a substantial part of the 50 million we lost should come back as soon as sales come back, and this creates probably overall for the division the biggest upside, but overall for the group also the biggest upside, because obviously also the retail division has been affected quite severely by the decline in the food category that we shared with you, this which has been far more severe and over proportional in terms of the margin decline that resulted from that. Now, your last question, I think, referred to mid or long term guidance that we provided.
Actually, there was just one on the rents as well. Where are you in terms of negotiations, and you know what is happening with the rent line?
Yes.
Do you think that you mentioned before that maybe we've hit peak rents and it should come down? You know, what are your thoughts at the moment, and you know, where are you in negotiations?
Well, the comment regarding peak rents, I think we made that already at the capital increase and trading update call, and I can still confirm that. Obviously, it's a supply-demand balance that has to be found now again, and we see there quite substantial supply with ultimately, let's call it, challenge demand, and not so much from the larger groups, but probably more specifically from smaller regional groups. And we see what I referred to earlier, also an impact from some strategic assessments that some of our competitors go through, where they potentially decide to exit non-core activities. And then it will be, obviously, most importantly, be a result of the recovery of the footfall at these locations. So I think we are fairly optimistic in terms of the comments we made in terms of peak rents, that we see a little bit an ease on the situation on rent negotiations going forward, which ultimately has, then, as you know, a quite substantial impact on profitability of our business. But this is rather something in the midterm, since we go through these renewal processes on a yearly basis. But we will benefit, I'm quite sure, from also the strong relationships we have with our main landlords, since they're also interested to have partners on the tenant side, which have proven a financial stability throughout the crisis and beyond the crisis specifically. Now, in terms of the negotiations, also I follow up just on what we also communicated in the past. I mean, these conversations are fairly dynamic, are fairly impacted through the actual development. And I mean, the last cycle of renegotiations we had last autumn, nobody predicted the severeness of the second wave. And so we are in completely different discussions again. And it's not only us, obviously, reassessing continuously the situation, but also the landlords and entering into that in that trade between financial stability of tenants, long-term view on the business, and actual the risk of losing tenants, and then to re-enter into negotiations with new ones under a slightly, as I said, probably a little bit slightly reduced demand situation. And so it's still, as we say, ongoing. Focus shifts now much more towards 21 and second wave, and this applies to all the main landlords. I think the best indication we have given you is what happened in last year, this 11% of reduction compared to the contractual rents for 2020. We also said that in all the indications we have given, and this is has been in the light of last year's view on the guidance, but ultimately we have been fairly cautious in terms of what ahead of us and what can be achieved in 21 last November in terms of rent concessions. Now we are again probably a little bit more optimistic since we experienced that severe deterioration of footfall again during the second wave, and this then could can contribute positively to the result in be it H1 or H2 this year. But the best thing I can say is that it's a fairly dynamic situation and very hard to predict where we end up with. But we are extremely cautious in terms of what we build in terms of expectations in our planning on our side.
And then the last one just on the medium-term guidance.
Exactly. And I think I mentioned it earlier, in terms of the medium long-term guidance, this is unchanged. It's all the indications we get from the business, even during the crisis, specifically the refurbishment of the SBB POS, shows or confirms our assumptions. The only thing that changes is slightly timing. So obviously this or 2020, we have not realized this improvement. It will be very ambitious to realize it this year. So it's going to move the target slightly into the future. But overall, there are none of the assumptions that were built in back then have changed. And that also refers to what Beat said in terms of the introduction to the outlook. All the macro trends we build in there, we see still in place to support that development. Even if it comes to mobility, we expect also, again, increased level of mobilities and growth, just given the population structure in the geographies we operate in. But in the short term, obviously, that has been heavily impacted by the governmental restrictions and the restrictions that also some of the employers decided to implement. And so timing is delayed and still a little bit up in the air. I hope we can be far more specific in H1 when we have a clear picture how we get step by step out of the restrictions, and specifically, obviously, the effectiveness of the vaccine programs and testing initiatives, and how employers, large employers, respond to that. And that's the best I can provide you in a long-term guidance right now.
Great, thank you.
The next question is from Arnold Wiesmann with Research Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello everyone. So Ronald Wildman, Research Partners. Most of the questions has been answered already, but one or two are left. First of all, when it comes to the concessions you get on rental expenses in 2020, probably you can clarify a little bit more how much of these concessions were only one-off, for the first part of the lockdown, and how much of the rental concessions are ongoing. And then the second question, I'm also a little bit surprised on the very positive outlook you give for end of the year, that you want to achieve same profitability at the end of the year compared to before crisis. So the question is, do you include in this guidance concessions of SBB? Is this included or not included? Because I think for most of us, it's clear that the biggest part of returning to profitability will be if you get to a deal with SBB or not. And then also, further question, if you would get to a deal with SBB, would you communicate that? Do you have to go for an ad hoc press release if you got to a new deal or not? How you will manage that? Is this something that you will probably then tell at the half year presentation, or can we expect ad hoc information between the year when you go to a new deal with SBB? Then the next one or two questions are more easy. I'm not sure if you answered the dividend question. Can you expect a dividend this year? And then probably you can give us, if you can, a little bit more guidance also for CapEx ongoing after 21. 21 you guide for 60 million. Probably you can also already guide for 22. 2 and 23 on CapEx. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this question. So I start on the SBB section. First of all, we do not hope that this situation requires ongoing discussions on the basis of recovered footfall. So when the footfall recovers, there are no concessions needed, and therefore no concessions are built in any plans going forward. It's the nature of these relationships that now and there you have slight adjustments. We talked earlier about store closures and changes of formats, but that's almost what I would call on a going concern basis. So no exceptional assumptions have been built in anything we said towards outlook on a longer term basis. Now for this year, the situation, so 21, situation is slightly different. We experience now a second wave comparable to the first wave. We communicated, not exclusively for SBB, but overall what we achieved in terms of rent concessions, and we said, in the trading update in November, but confirmed again today, we're fairly cautious in terms of building in these effects for this year. Now since we have no guidance given specifically on an EBIT level for this year, it's probably also less relevant. But towards the end of the year, the main driver to return to profitability is comparable to a pre-crisis level is footfall and sales. And this is obviously the biggest unknown. Now, why we are optimistic? Main reason is because we went through the recovery already last year. And I think part of that is also, fairly transparent, especially since we have given sales level for September last year. We all have been here last September and experienced the situation in a way which was not fully recovered and fully all the restrictions have been lifted. Now, I think it's not overly optimistic that towards the end of the year, if vaccine programs, if potential testing programs gain traction, that we are on a level beyond what we experienced last September. But that's the biggest uncertainty, and that's what ultimately all of us have to take our own view. But that's how we build, or that's the basis of what we have given you as an indication for our guide. Now, do we have to communicate any SVB agreement? So we have been, I think, fairly clear that we do not comment single negotiation landlord relationships. I think we follow quite clearly, obviously, the ad hoc regulations in a sense that we think there is something that is of could have a substantial impact, we would have to communicate it. And in that light, I think you can expect us also to communicate going forward. Maybe with that, I hand over to Beat for the remaining questions or additions to the communication the rental agreement.
Maybe one remark to the rent concessions. You are all aware, of course, of this temporary exceptional treatment under IFRS 16, this COVID-19 related rent concession paper. This was originally given until June 30th this year, and it has now been extended by 1 year. So it's going to be applicable until mid-2020, which simply means that whenever we get a rent concession, we can show it directly in our P&L, and it has not to be treated as a modification over the remaining lifetime of the rent contract. I think that's a very important extension for Valora as well, as we are heavily impacted by IFRS 16. Maybe before we conclude, then just dividend. It depends if things develop materialize as we have now indicated in our outlook. Then I can imagine that we pay already something in form of dividend back to our shareholders. I mentioned it before, they have contributed a lot and will contribute again this year. And based on this, I think such a signal would be very important as well. CapEx, yes, we have once given the indication of roughly 60 million. I think it goes without saying that if we catch up on the yesterday refurbishment, then most probably in 22, it's going to be slightly more than this, but but we do not give further guidance on CapEx for the years beyond 21. Let's have a discussion on this as well mid-year when we come up with more precise guidance on the full year 21.
May I add two questions?
Sure.
On Bob Finance, I'm really not sure about the business model. Are you exposed to bad loans with Bob Finance? And then probably to clarify again on this rental discussion with SBB. I mean, when I understand you right, then you expect that the mobility of the COVID will be at the same level than before COVID, even with the impact of home office and all the other impacts you probably may have after COVID. Is this your expectation?
Yeah, maybe I start with the second question to wrap the discussion up. I mean, first of all, SBB is an extremely important partner in our business, but we have many other landlords and we operate many businesses outside of SBB. So for retail Switzerland, obviously, SBB is important in terms of profit contribution. But beyond that, we also have other businesses where we see opportunities and that are in a different situation, be it contractual agreements, minimum rents that we have to pay, and also opportunities in terms of footfall. Overall, I can confirm, yes, we think mobility will recover substantially. Be it exactly the same number as before as a basis for future growth? I don't know, but it will be fairly at the levels that we anticipate. Again, here, timing is fairly uncertain, but what we have seen, and I think Beat indicated on John's question regarding break-even, that it does not have to fully recover to 100% for us in order to return to full profitability. Mm-hmm. First of all, because we expect it's not only footfall, but also capture rate of our business, so we can increase ultimately our presence given the stronger formats and potentially also slightly weakened competition in the short term. And in the longer term, we will see, given the population growth dynamics, also, again, growth in mobility. And then secondly, I mean, there is a whole set of factors that will influence that, which are very hard to predict. But overall, what we also included in our guidance, first of all, home office affects only roughly 50%. This is a German study, but I think it applies also to Switzerland, 50%. Of the overall workforce. So within that workforce, we see definitely changes in how often people go to the office and potentially some flexibility. But we see also, at least also based on our own experience, quite a strong trend that people want to go out, meet people again, and have this physical interaction or are slightly tired of working from home. But most importantly, it does not have to be at 100% for us to be at 100% profitability, because there are other factors influencing that, and ultimately also including changes in the product mix that we offer and the cost structure that we operate our business in. And with that, I would like to close the mobility and SBB question and go back to your first question regarding Bob Finance. think we documented quite nicely that we had an increase in our loan portfolio. And to make this 100% clear, this increase in the loan portfolio came not at the expense of a higher risk exposure. We have been super restrictive in the way we operated that business. The loan portfolio could have increased far more dramatically over the last year if we would not have applied these heavy restrictions to the business. And this was probably the most important part of the risk management. Now, how bad loans influence our balance sheet, I think we shared that with you in the past. Most importantly, we refinance these loans through the GLKB. There are certain mechanisms in place how we have to qualify these loans and under what which criteria these loans have to meet in order to be transferred to GLKB. And I think you can assume this is also then under very, very tight surveillance of the GLKB side in terms of what kind of risks we are taking. So with that, I hear there are no further questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question. I would now like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Mueller for any closing remarks.
So as a closing remark, I would like to conclude with thanking you for your participation in the call. Thank you for all the questions, and I thank specifically also for all the stakeholders, partners, employees, and management who support us in this very difficult year. And I specifically thank also all the investors and stakeholders to be patient, but also sending us very strong signs of trust, also specifically from our main shareholder, Mr. Ditch. And we are optimistic that we will see the turnaround of the market, of our business in 21, and look forward already to be a little bit more specific in terms of the timing and overall impact the new situation we will see hopefully in spring has on our business as part of our H1 results. And with that, I thank you, wish you a wonderful day, and look forward to hear back on the next call in the future. Thank you very much.